the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey, good Friday morning, and thanks for joining us today here on AgNet West, Farm City Newsday. Moving right along into today's program headlines, Brian German is talking with us about an expected record year for agri-food tech investments. And speaking of setting records, Taylor Hillman has details on a report that's predicting yet another strong almond record year. And I'm starting off today's show with why California Farm Bureau President Jamie Johansen said flexibility is needed in conservation programs. Let's jump right in. California Farm Bureau President Jamie Johansen testified at the U.S. House Agriculture Subcommittee on Conservation and Forestry.
Our producers are at the forefront of investment in agricultural research and adopting practices that improve productivity while enhancing sustainability. Conservation is widespread in California agriculture. Our farmers and ranchers have a proven track record of doing more with less. Practices include water recharge, irrigation efficiency, energy conservation, and investment in farm equipment with cleaner emissions. With so much already happening at the field level, it is important to consider how new federal policies and programs will overlay with existing state climate programs, and most importantly, grower-led initiatives.
He mentioned that Title II programs provide growers with more opportunities to participate in climate smart practices, highlighting the EQIP program.
Title II programs provide producers with additional ability to adopt conservation practices while improving agricultural production. We are appreciative of the improvements made to the conservation title by this committee in the last Farm Bill, including enhanced flexibility of programs to meet producer needs. EQIP is the most utilized program in California, assisting producers with options and achieving greater conservation goals. It's important that any changes made to Title II do not walk back those flexibilities.
He said to ensure climate benefits are adopted, he's proposing NRCS consider
prioritizing EQIP contracts that result in emission reductions, increased carbon sequestration, and improved climate resilience.
And here in California, the new Conservation Agriculture Planning Grant Program would fund the development of a plan to help farmers and ranchers identify actions for climate change mitigation and adaptation, just as Jamie mentioned. CDFA has collaborated with NRCS in developing this new program to both complement and align with the federal level conservation planning efforts. CDFA Secretary Karen Ross says, quote, planning is vital for agriculture resiliency to address both current and future issues. Adding, we're pleased to establish this new program to encourage planning activities that ensure food security in a changing climate. CDFA is currently seeking public comment on this program. Stay tuned as we'll have more from Johansen later in the show today, but for now, here's Taylor Hillman with more agriculture news.
The subjective forecast for the 2021 California almond season is higher than last year's. The 2021 California almond forecast from the National Agricultural Statistics Service is predicting 3.2 billion pounds. That forecasted production is 3% above last year's production of 3.12 billion pounds. The bearing acreage in the report for 2021 is 1,330,000 bearing acres, which is a record. Forecasted yield in the report is just over 2,400 pounds per acre. That's 3% lower than 2020. USDA noted in the report that the 2021 almond crop experienced a mostly dry winter throughout California, although there were a few scattered storms, snowpack and water levels are well below normal. Warm temperatures provided excellent bloom conditions, with peak bloom occurring in late February and early March. The report went on to say that pollination activity was reported to be very good and long overlapping bloom periods. The last few days of bloom were impacted by rain, wind, and a few instances of hail. However, excellent growing conditions in April benefited the crop's development, and disease pressure remained low. The 2021 crop is estimated to be the largest on record. Again, this is the National Agricultural Statistics Service's subjective report. There often can be changes between the subjective and the objective report, which comes out in a few months. Reporting for AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Taylor Hillman.
Rice growers dealing with significant weed problems may want to consider fallowing the affected fields. Rice farm advisor for Sutter, Yuba, Placer, and Sacramento counties, Whitney Brim DeForest, described some of the best practices for fallowing rice fields to address weed issues.
There's a certain set of practices for folks that aren't able to put any water on their field. So if it's a dry fallow, then we would say that we're not sure exactly how much control they will have. But there's a chance that if there's some seed, especially on the soil surface from the previous fall, that there might be predation. If the seed did imbibe a little bit of water, take up a little bit of water, it could dry out. So there's some chance that any seed that is on the soil surface or near the soil surface may die. if they do see plants coming up, we don't want them to go to seed. So in that case, we would recommend that they go out and they till the field. So just shallow tillage, don't get very deep or you're going to bring up more weed seeds. And then if they are able to put water on the field, now this is more of a proven technique for getting rid of weedy rice and just weeds in general. But if they are able to put water on the field, then we would recommend that they do sort of a managed fallow where they're flushing the field, waiting for the weeds to come up. And then once the soil dries, then going out and doing a shallow tillage and then repeating the process. So that would be if they are able to irrigate.
Investment in agri-food technology reached a record high in 2020 with expectations for that trend to continue. According to the 2020 Agri-Food Tech Investment Review from Finisterre Ventures, overall investment in agri-food tech companies reached $22.3 billion last year. Of the overall total, $5 billion was invested in ag tech, while $17.3 billion was invested in the food tech sector. The number reflects a compound annual growth rate of 50% between 2010 and 2020. The staggering growth in investment in 2020 is highlighted in the report, with the single year's investment equating to approximately one-third of total investment in ag tech and food tech over the past decade. Biotech remained the number one sector for ag tech investment, attracting $1.3 billion in 2020. Animal tech investment grew to nearly $850 million, primarily due to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Subsectors like digital technologies, precision agriculture, and plant sciences also broke investment records in 2020. Based on the early data, expectations are for 2021 to be another record year for investment. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian. It's time where we head out for a short break. We'll be right back with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley, state, and nation, and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. Wild Eye solutions include soil moisture monitoring, weather stations with frost alerts, flow monitoring and compliance reporting for Sigma and SB88, pump and valve control, and many more. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. Global research released this week shows consumers are open to pivoting to cultivated meat in the future. The study was released by Aleph Farms, a cultured meat startup based in Israel with an office in the United States. Their research claims many consumers were not familiar with cultivated meat, yet upon being presented with a description, the respondents on average imagined that cultivated meat could make up about 40% of their future meat intake, with conventional meat constituting around 60%. The survey included roughly 2,000 U.S. consumers and 2,000 U.K. consumers. In addition, the study showed patterns of greater openness to trying such products by younger generational groups. 87-89% of Gen Z adults, 84-85% of millennials, 76-77% of Gen X, and 70-74% of baby boomers were at least somewhat open to trying cultivated meat. An Aleph Farms representative states the organization's vision, quote, is to provide a better alternative to industrial livestock farming, unquote. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now for more local news, here's Brian German.
Startups and scale-ups will have until June 11th to submit an application for the Thrive Bayer Sustainability Challenge. Head of Open Innovation and Strategic Partnerships for Bayer, Alan Christian, describes some of the benefits that the winners of the challenge will receive.
There's a couple different ways that the winning companies will benefit. They'll have just immediately access to our R&D team resources, working with my team and with the investment teams within Bayer. And they'll have the opportunity technically to discuss what they're doing with us and to see how we can help. And if the partnerships are such that some kind of an ongoing relationship would be beneficial, then that's something we would love to be able to discuss with them. In addition, there's for the startups, there's an investment out of the Thrive Fund and additional benefits coming from the Thrive organization as well, which is just a great organization that's really helping to drive this challenge.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
A new report shows that meatpacking facilities were hit harder than originally thought by the pandemic. A study looking at the impacts of COVID-19 attributed 334,000 cases of the virus to meatpacking plants around the U.S. Courtesy of the Pacific Northwest Ag Network, UC Davis researcher Tina Saitone is the lead on the project and said that resulted in an $11 billion economic impact. However, the exact numbers are hard to detail because of county reporting.
There's going to be instances where a meatpacking plant employee works in County X, but lives and does their shopping and their, community type activities in County Y.
There has been talk about distributing packing done in major plants over more smaller plants to avoid this issue in the future. Saitone warned that that could increase costs as well.
The current system has developed to operate very efficiently and provide animal-based protein to consumers at a relatively reasonable price. And so if we move to a smaller scale, more geographically dispersed system, we're going to actually be adding cost back into the meatpacking sector evolved to eliminate them.
Reporting for AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Taylor Hillman.
Are retail food prices behaving as the economists expected?
No. Not really.
Not really. That response from Agriculture Department economist Carolyn Schelling is after studying this week's new Consumer Price Index.
We were not expecting prices to continue to increase.
Many analysts expected grocery store food prices to level off and decline after getting so high at the height of the COVID crisis. But instead, during April,
we saw all food prices increase 0.5%. We saw restaurant food prices increase 0.3%. And then we saw food at home or grocery store prices increase 0.6%.
Those are considered pretty big changes for 1 month. And so right now, grocery store food prices for beef, 4% higher than a year ago at this time. Pork about 5%, fresh fruits averaging 6% higher. Food prices in April, of course, following the trend of all items in the economy, which went up 0.8%, largest monthly increase since September 2008. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
You're listening to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be right back. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley, state, and nation, and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. Wild Eye solutions include soil moisture monitoring, weather stations with frost alerts, flow monitoring and compliance reporting for Sigma and SB88, pump and valve control, and many more. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Neal. In this week's Almond Matters, brought to you by Valent, getting early and effective ant control may be even more important this year with another record almond forecast.
We're talking again with Todd Berchtol this morning. He's the Field Market Development Specialist for Valent USA. And today we're discussing ant problems in orchards. So let's get into what growers need to be doing to prevent ant damage and why they need to get proactive in getting those plans implemented.
Well, the biggest thing is prevention. You don't want to let ants get literally colonized in the orchard, because when you go to harvest and those nuts are on the ground, that's a source of protein for them, and they all go after them, and then you have damage at the huller processor when you finally get those nuts to wherever you're going. So keeping the ants out of the orchard is highly recommended. Again, an ounce of prevention in this case is worth a pound of cure. So going out early when you first see ants and treating with, there's several baits available. I recommend a steam ant bait. It's very effective in long term. Basically, the pyrproxysin component of the steam ant bait is taken back to the colony, and the colony is fed upon that. It's a food source for them, and so they take it back, they feed the brood, and it affects the eggs and the instar larva of the ants. They don't molt, and so basically you decimate the entire colony. And it's a highly effective tool. It's not fast. We put it out today. I wouldn't expect to see results for at least 2 to 3 weeks. So that's why you need to work early on getting those ants controlled rather than later. You know, a week before you put your nuts on the ground is going to be too late. You want the colonies to be wiped out before it. And that goes for all ant materials, not just the seed. There's other materials out there that are hugely toxic to ants. The steam is an IGR, insect growth regulator, so it basically takes out the entire colony, whereas the other ones will kill ants, but the ants can resurface as far as composition. So that's my recommendation, to start right now, this middle of May. By the middle of June, I would say you probably need to have your ant material on the ground and ants feeding on it in order to keep them at bay, knock them out before you harvest. When you harvest, you don't want to have any ants out there foraging. And when you put nuts on the ground, when you shake those nuts, because if you do, they'll use those nuts as a source of food. And when you give ants food, they propagate their species. You want to wipe out the entire colony before your nuts go on the ground. And that's why I highly recommend the steam ant bait, because if you put it out right now, you can effectively decimate the entire colony or colonies in the orchard by the insect growth regulating effect of the steam. It basically causes the whole population to crash.
So multiple options out there for growers to choose from to combat ants. But with an insect growth regulator like a steam, that early action is going to be critical. And now with USDA's forecast for another 3 billion pound plus crop this year, that's going to make ant control even more important, right? Making sure that come harvest time, you're not dealing with ant damage.
Yeah, you want to take them out before you put nuts on the ground. You want to make sure your orchard's clean, and that starts now, not, you know, a week before harvest. You need to do it in plan ahead. Most PCAs, pest control advisors, are abreast of ants. They're out there scouting for fungal diseases, alternaria, and scab and whatnot in the orchards. They'll be taking notice of ants, and basically it's a prophylactic treatment. If you see any ant activity at all, you better start putting a bait out there to knock them out. That's where a steam comes in. It's attractive to ants early on, and once you put nuts on the ground, those nuts are going to dominate the food source, and your ant bait is going to be too little too late.
So definitely want to get on that early. Todd Berchtol with Valent USA, thanks again for taking the time and sharing your insight.
No problem, buddy. Anytime.
Thanks, Brian. It's that time where we head out for a short break, but we'll be right back with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. Just a friendly reminder that if you've missed any of our morning shows or you need to simply catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Farm City Newsday in your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Farm City Newsday, and it's available on both Apple and Android devices. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley, state, and nation, and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. Wild Eye solutions include soil moisture monitoring, weather stations with frost alerts, flow monitoring and compliance reporting for Sigma and SB88, pump and valve control, and many more. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. U.S. farm tractor unit sales continue double-digit growth rate in both the U.S. and Canada, and inventories continue to fall after a strong month of April. U.S. total farm tractor sales rose 22.7% in April compared to 2020, which was the first month of the current sales growth trend, while U.S. combine sales fell 3.2%. U.S. tractor sales grew across every segment, with the biggest gains in the 100-plus horsepower segment, up 29.2%. For Canada, April monthly tractor and combine sales were positive across all segments, with the four-wheel drive segment nearly doubling, up 93.3% to 201 units sold, while total farm tractor sales were up 72.3%. Combine sales also grew 23.1%. Kurt Blades, Senior Vice President of Ag Services at the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, says, quote, "Seeing the larger row crop units leading the way in segment gains shows the pull rising commodity prices have been having on equipment sales," unquote. An alliance created 5 years ago to support and promote farmers in their conservation efforts has reached a new level. The Dairy Strong Sustainability Alliance this week announced its transformation into Farmers for Sustainable Food. The group is a nonprofit organization that provides resources, advocacy, support, and empowerment for farmers who are innovating and demonstrating sustainable farming practices. The transition marks a change to a broader focus, more innovative projects, and a diverse set of partners, according to a news release. Farmers for Sustainable Food President Todd Dornick says, quote, "Our focus is on uniting stakeholders to collaborate across organizational lines, inspiring farmers to be leaders of change, and empowering our partners to meet their goals," unquote. The organization closely supports six farmer-led watershed conservation groups encompassing 211 farms, nearly 300,000 acres, and 212,000 cows, hogs, and other livestock. The organization and its partners are also developing on-farm initiatives to test ways of measuring sustainability and documenting the impact of conservation practices, both environmentally and financially. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Earlier this week, California Farm Bureau President Jamie Johansen testified at the U.S. House Agriculture Subcommittee on Conservation and Forestry. Here are his opening remarks.
Jamie Johansen, President of California Farm Bureau and a first-generation olive and citrus farmer. California's producers are all too familiar with changing weather conditions. The current U.S. Drought Monitor reports that over 97% of California is experiencing moderate to exceptional drought, impacting over 34 million Californians. We're also focused to have above normal fire potential this year. California's wildfires are very personal to me. Not only as president of an organization who has witnessed countless stories of farmers lost and frustration, but also because my family has been evacuated three times in the last 4 years due to wildfire. Sadly, there is no wildfire season in California. The risk is now year-round, and it is immense. Last year, the U.S. Forest Service stated in testimony that they would need $2 to $3 billion per year for treatments required to get ahead of hazardous fuel levels on the national forest system. We urge the committee to include both forestry and grazing practices as strategies to restore forest health and rangeland health and increase fire resilience. We also ask that the subcommittee helps to ensure that sufficient disaster assistance programs, such as the Wildfire Hurricane Indemnity Program Plus, are made available to producers. Our producers are at the forefront of investment in agricultural research and adopting practices that improve productivity while enhancing sustainability. Conservation is widespread in California agriculture. Our farmers and ranchers have a proven track record of doing more with less. Practices include water recharge, irrigation efficiency, energy conservation, and investment in farm equipment with cleaner emissions. With so much already happening at the field level, it is important to consider how new federal policies and programs will overlay with existing state climate programs, and most importantly, grower-led initiatives. Title II programs provide producers with additional ability to adopt conservation practices while improving agricultural production. We are appreciative of the improvements made to the conservation title by this committee in the last Farm Bill, including enhanced flexibility of programs to meet producer needs. EQIP is the most utilized program in California, assisting producers with options and achieving greater conservation goals. It's important that any changes made to Title II do not walk back those flexibilities. To help ensure climate benefits are adopted, NRCS could consider prioritizing EQIP contracts that result in emission reductions, increased carbon sequestration, and improved climate resilience. Prioritization would still need to remain flexible for all crop types with sufficient levels of financial and technical assistance. California produces over 400 commodities with various cropping systems and farm sizes. Practices will need to be broad and outcome-based, emphasizing a list of options as opposed to a prescriptive checklist. The nexus between the lack of broadband in many agricultural areas and implementation should also be considered. We also urge the committee to consider adding feed, genetics, and nutrition management as eligible practices within the Conservation Innovation Grant Program to provide additional opportunities for farmers to test the newest technologies and evaluate their impact within their operation. While trials around feed additives and genetics are not explicitly excluded, it is also not clear that they are included. We're also very supportive of the Regional Conservation Partnership Program, which offers producers the opportunity to work collaboratively with NRCS and other conservation partners. We supported the change in the 2018 Farm Bill that reconfigured RCPP as a standalone program. And we are currently an RCPP partner working collaboratively on tricolored blackbird nesting colonies with many of our dairy farms in the Central Valley. Regardless of programs or practice, financial and technical assistance must be consistent, sustainable and long-term if our expectations of producers are also long-term. We must also consider the indirect pressure this may place on important CCC-funded program, the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, as well as livestock and other disaster programs. California Farm Bureau supports producer participation in voluntary climate smart practices that sequester carbon, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and build climate resilience. While many have been incorporating climate smart practices on their operations for years, to further adoption on the on-farm climate smart practices, we must not only compensate early adopters, but also consider the economics of the farm and assist those being expected to do more. Only in working together can we achieve solutions that make agriculture more climate resilient while remaining viable. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today, and I look forward to your questions.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow AgNet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgNetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgNetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgNetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City Newsday by AgNet West.